Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the 16th podcast I've recorded. I'm recording it in September of 2008, and the title is Passive Investing is the Most Emotional Investing Approach of All, Part 3. What I've done with this series of podcasts is I wrote down, the idea was to explain why I am such a severe critic of the passive investing model of understanding how stocks work. And the passive investing model is by far the most dominant model today. When you pick up a magazine, Money Magazine or the Wall Street Journal or whatever it happens to be, and you look for advice on what to do with your investments, that advice is 9 times out of 10 the product of the passive investing school of thought, because that school of thought is the dominant school of today. So if you're reading conventional advice, that's what you're reading. The passive investing school of thought has been discredited going back decades now, at least 2 decades. And of course, the evidence that passive investing does not work in the real world has been growing stronger and stronger as time goes on. And all of the work that I do on investing at my website is anti-passive investing. I believe we should just drop the recommendations to engage in passive investing and develop a new model of investing, a model that works, a model that makes sense, a model for the real world. I call this model rational investing. The difference between the two models is simple but fundamental. The difference is that passive investing says that there is no need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. Just stick with that same old stock allocation, even though the risk of investing in stocks is many, many times higher than it was when you set that stock allocation, when you determined how much you should be invested in stocks. The rational investing model is just the opposite. The rational investing model says no. With any asset you buy, you need to take price into consideration. When you buy a house or when you buy a car, you consider the price, and to not consider the price would be insane. And the same is true with stocks. When we buy stocks, we need to look at the price, because the price determines the long-term value effect, the value proposition of the stocks we buy. So you obviously cannot expect the same long-term value proposition when you buy stocks at the prices they've been selling at for the past 10 years as you could when you bought stocks at a time when they were selling at reasonable price levels. So there's really only one major difference. That really is the only difference between the passive model and the rational model. But that difference makes all the difference in the world, because what happens is, as time goes on, passive investors become more and more worried, more and more anxious about what's happening with their retirement portfolios, because their money is going down the drain. Stocks, they buy a lot of stocks when stocks are at bad prices. Stocks perform poorly, and this causes panic, and they end up selling usually at just the wrong time for doing so. In contrast, the rational model makes sense. It just instantly makes sense to anyone who's bought a house or bought a car or bought a banana. It makes sense to consider price. So when you consider price, stocks are no longer this strange, mysterious world that you can't make sense out of. Stocks become understandable. They become sensible. And so over time, as you see stocks performing just the way your common sense would tell you that they should perform, you grow more and more confident. And so as you become confident, it becomes possible to become a long-term investor in the real world, not just in the theoretical world that passive investors talk about. And in long-term investing is where the real financial success is, in my belief. It's long-term investors that really end up doing best over the long run. So I'm a big believer in rational investing, a big critic of passive investing. And I come on so strong in opposition to passive investing that I worry that people who are new to the site will think I come off as strident. So I put together this series of podcasts to explain why it is that that Rob Bennett has become so radicalized on the question of passive investing. Why do I feel so strongly? And I scribbled down 35 alarm bells, things that I learned over the course of the past 6 years. We've been having discussions on the problems of the passive investing model at the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities for over 6 years now. And these are things I learned during those discussions. And each of them made me feel stronger about my misgivings about passive investing in the beginning, and ultimately my fierce opposition to the passive investing approach that I feel today. So in the first two parts of the podcast title, I talked about the number one alarm bell is that passive investing just does not make sense. No one has ever been able to give a good reason for why investors should not look at price. Why should we not lower our stock allocations when prices get high and when stocks get dangerous? No one has ever offered any rational explanation for that root belief of the passive investing model. And I'm sure that no one ever will. It's just, this is why I say passive investing is not really a theory. It's a mistake even to refer to it as a theory. Passive investing is just purely an emotion. What it is that it makes no sense not to change your stock allocation. It makes no intellectual sense not to change your stock allocation. But it sure makes emotional sense. When stock prices go to the moon, humans have a get-rich-quick impulse that says, I want. I want a get-rich-quick scheme. I want money for nothing. So we all have implanted within us this self-destruction urge. And we want, we very, very, very much want a theory that will justify it. You know, it's hard for a human to get up and say, I want to invest in stocks. They're extremely overpriced. My common sense tells me this is a bad, bad idea. I'm going to lose most of my retirement money, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, we feel funny about that. So we crave some sort of theoretical justification. And that's what passive investing is. And the people who cooked it up, I am confident. I don't know that it was necessarily cooked up for emotional reasons when it started. I think it, in part, probably that was so. In part, I think it just genuinely was an error. It comes out of the efficient market theory. And I think it were some academics trying to study some things. And the efficient market theory, I'll have a separate podcast on the efficient market theory somewhere down the road. But I think the academics were trying to sort of hold certain things stable so that they could study things better. And the thing they held stable was human emotion. They didn't want to look at that. That's sort of a yucky part of the whole business. The types of people that study investing tend to be numbers-oriented people. They don't like to look at things like emotions. It makes them feel queasy, makes them feel uncomfortable. So some of these academics said, let's just leave that out of the equation. And I think they probably started out, it was just sort of a what-if exercise. What if emotions didn't play a role? And then what they found was they could generate all these studies, they could do all sorts of things with this model, and they really got into it. And they sort of forgot that it's just a what-if model. It's not the real world. The world isn't like this. Only this model is like this. And that got carried away. And then at some point, you know, then a lot of people really began to believe in it. As prices went up, that's when the emotional element got involved. You know, prices started skyrocketing. And they said, hey, our model works. It's good. You know, it's good. We did it. We figured out stock investing. And only now, only as prices have begun coming down over the past 10 years, are people working up the courage to say, wait a minute, maybe we didn't get it all right. Maybe we made some big mistakes. Maybe we've caused a lot of human misery. Maybe we jumped too quick to some conclusions. And that's precisely what happened. People jumped way too quickly to some bad conclusions. And now that people are looking at this, the evidence has just accumulated, and it's massive that passive investing does not work and that passive investing cannot work. But there's a great reluctance among the experts, the people that we turn to for guidance on investing, to acknowledge how strong the case is against passive investing. So you get into what happens now. Of course, at the same time, we developed this internet communications medium, and that allows people to ask questions. People who are not experts, people like me, you know, who just come along and they're studying something and they ask some questions. And so I just fell into this. This was not intentional, but because of the discussion board community I was involved in, the retire early community, the question came up about safe withdrawal rates, and I asked some, you know, quote unquote rude questions, and they don't have any answers. The people who wrote these studies have no way of justifying the methodology they used. And so it what we saw in those discussions is, you know, great interest among ordinary investors. For the first time, they were hearing about a model of investing that makes sense. And so we had tremendous enthusiasm for the discussions among the majority of the community. But then we had 10 or 20% of viciously abusive community members just trying to shut the discussions down. And we've seen that same pattern repeat over and over again over 6 years. So today, there are a number of communities where discussions of the failure of the passive investing model has been flat out banned. You may not speak about it. You'll be removed. You can post little hints. They allow people to sort of, you know, say, oh, I wonder sometimes if this is right. You know, they'll let you do that. But if you bring in the historical data and you show that, in fact, passive investing has never worked, the same basic model has been tried under other names three earlier times in history, it has always resulted in bone-crushing losses for middle-class investors. It's 0 for 3, the passive investing model. And we're now living through the fourth try. And I think it would be fair to say today, in September of 2008, the fourth try isn't looking any better than the first three. We're seeing bone-crushing losses once again. We're seeing the biggest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. So that's sort of where we stand. But the first basic point that shows passive investing is emotional is that it does not make sense. And so you have to turn. If it doesn't make logical sense, you have to turn elsewhere. Well, what's the cause? What's behind it? What's behind it is emotion. Secondly, we saw the reaction of people trying to defend the model. And there are many people today who believe in passive investing. With their hearts, minds, and souls. They can't explain why they believe it. They can't articulate it. They don't know the reasons. But boy, do they believe in it. And so when you challenge them, when you question them, they freak out. They respond with defensiveness, anger, confusion, all this sort of thing. That's another bad sign. Another sign that passive investing is emotional, an emotional investing approach. Third, we've seen experts who have pointed out the failings of passive investing. And you don't hear much about this in the media, in the conventional media. Scott Burns had, I think, the most important line of the entire debate when he said, the reason you don't hear much about what we've learned about safe withdrawal rates in recent years, safe withdrawal rates are the studies that we use to plan our retirements. The reason, you know, they've known these studies were flawed going back years now. Why don't they tell people so that people will structure their retirements properly? Well, Scott Burns hit it on the head. The reason the media doesn't report this is, quote, it is information most people don't want to hear. For 20 or 30 years, people have been told that passive investing works, and they've built their lives around it. They've built their retirement plans around it. Now you're going to pull the rug out from under them? You're going to tell them it was all gibberish? The numbers were wrong. They planned their retirements and the studies. The numbers were wildly wrong. They forgot to include valuations when calculating what we can withdraw from our retirement plans. They forgot. You know, it sounds awful. It is awful. But my view is that there's no other way to get beyond it than just to acknowledge what happened and go forward. But a lot of experts are very uneasy about saying things in clear and direct terms that middle-class investors can understand. But if you dig for it, you will find them telling the true story. If you dig for it, it is out there. And that material is at my website and in these earlier podcasts. So those are some of the things we've seen as the primary reasons why I say passive investing is the most emotional investing approach of all. I'll pick up today with alarm bell number 15. And this is a strange one. I challenge you to ponder it a bit, because if you think about it, it will really help the pieces click into place. It's important. This subject, it's hard to talk about, because on the one hand, there's so many, you know, it's like being in the ocean and there are currents going from the left and from the right. There's cross currents all over the place. And one of them is the whole message of rational investing is a very, very positive pro-stock message. So many times, things that I say, the people on the other side will try to mischaracterize it. They'll say, oh, Rob is against stocks. You know, nothing could be further from the truth. Rational investing tells us that stocks are the best asset class for the middle class by far, far better than we ever thought when following passive investing. Because with passive investing, you have no idea when to lower your stock allocation. You get these years of great returns like we saw in the 1990s, but you also get these years of crushing losses like we're living through today. So is it a good asset class or a bad asset class? Well, when you look at it rationally, when you drop the passive model and you look at the historical data and you see how stocks have always performed, what you learn is stocks are a great asset class. 80% of the time, whenever they're at low prices or moderate prices, stocks are a great, great asset class. It's only when stocks get to the price levels we've seen over the past 10 years that stocks became a truly dangerous asset class for the middle class investor. So if you pull back on your stock allocation at those times, guess what happens? You have a lot more assets to invest in stocks when reasonable prices return. So there's nothing anti-stock in looking at the historical data. The historical data is pro-stock all the way. It's anti-passive investing. You see the difference? It's very, very important. Well, anyway, that's one of the cross currents. But another cross current is this question of cynicism. Because when I report these things, you know, I'm telling you, the experts aren't shooting straight with you. We discovered in May of 2002 that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are wildly wrong. Millions of people are going to suffer busted retirements as a result of the demonstrably false claims made in those studies. We're not talking about a matter of opinion. The old school studies are based on historical data, just as the new school studies are. So we're not talking about opinion. We're talking about what does the historical data say? The old school studies are premised on the idea that valuations don't affect the safe withdrawal rate. Well, look at the historical data. Do valuations affect long-term returns or do they not? The evidence is overwhelming that they do. So it's easy to get cynical about this. This is, you know, one way to deal with it is to deny everything. Just deny the facts. And that's what we have among the dogmatists. The passive investing dogmatists just say, crush it. If we don't hear it, it doesn't exist. If we don't know about it, we're fine. And that's not where I'm coming from. You couldn't be more opposed to that approach than I am. But another approach, which is sort of the other extreme, is to become highly cynical and to say, everybody's lying. All the experts are just lying. Well, I don't think that's so. And I will have a separate podcast just on that issue, because that's a very important issue, and I don't think the cynical approach is so. It may be that there's a small number out there doing that, but there's lots of evidence the other way about a lot of the people that I refer to in my podcast. I can't think of a case in which I've referred to an expert in any of my podcasts who is not a top-notch individual in terms of the research they've done. So I'm dealing with the best out there. And the best out there are messing up. They're making mistakes left and right. Please understand me. You know, they're giving poor advice. They're telling people to hold on to their high stock allocations when people should be pulling back and protecting themselves. So, you know, please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But that doesn't mean that they are cynically, abusing the public trust. It An alternate explanation is they are confused themselves. The experts themselves are victims of passive investing. And this is what this point gets to. Item 15. I wrote an article on this at the website. It's in the Banned at Motley Fool section of the website. I believe the title of the article is, Does John Graney Really Believe, or Does John Graney Believe His Own Safe Withdrawal Rate Claims? And John Graney is he's an author of one of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. John's website, if you want to check it out, is retireearlyhomepage.com. And his safe withdrawal rate study is there, and other materials as well. Check it out. But John, I posted with John, and I was friends with John in the days when I was posting about saving. And then I still consider John my friend today. But John does not consider me his friend in any way, shape, or form. John just freaked out when his methodology was questioned. And he's led a six-year smear campaign against me and anyone else who asks questions about the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, or, you know, even about passive investing in general at this point. You know, he has people that go around the internet and try to find if there are any blogs discussing this, and then they go in and they smear the people and all this sort of thing. It's just crazy stuff, totally crazy stuff. But that's what he does with his life today. He's retired and he spends all his time doing this. Anyway, but the point here isn't to go on and on about John, but the point is, does John and others, the article doesn't mean just John Graney, it's I'm using him as an example, but does he, you know, he knows that his case is weak, right? Or he wouldn't engage in these smear campaigns. So he knows his case is weak. He knows he cannot defend the methodology of his study in reasoned and civil debate. He knew that a long, 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 long time ago, certainly by August of 2002, if not earlier. So he knows that. Well, the cynical explanation is that the reason he is so hotly opposed to honest discussion of the topic is he's embarrassed. He made errors in the study, and it hurt a lot of people, and he doesn't want it known, right? Now, I'm sure that that's one of the motivations, but I am also pretty sure it is not the only motivation. And the reason I say that is, John has told us in post that he has a high stock allocation to this day. I believe it's somewhere around 90%. I don't know precisely. If he has an allocation of 90% today, or anything in that neighborhood, doesn't that tell you that there is some sincerity in what he says? It doesn't justify, you know, the abuse of posting. But doesn't it tell you that John himself, at least on some level of consciousness, still believes in passive investing, right? And if it were only John, I might say, no, you know, he's just some guy on the internet, you know, maybe he's lying about his motive, his allocation. But it's not only John. There are hundreds of people who have engaged in abusive posting at the various boards. But then, when they're on some other thread where their ideas are not being challenged, they talk about their allocations, and they've got high stock allocations, 70% or 80%. Well, there was one guy, Nords, he had 100% allocation. And he defends the passive investing model, you know, in very, very strong terms. And he engages in abusive posting when this question comes up. So you've got this strange mix. You've got people who don't have any confidence in the model they're using to invest. They don't have any confidence in one way because they engage in abusive posting, which shows that they lack confidence. But they do have enough confidence to put their own money on the table. What do you make of that? What it tells me is that investing in general is an intensely emotional life endeavor. We are not rational actors when it comes to how we invest our money. And the second thing it tells me is that the passive investing model feeds into that. What passive investing does is it takes our weak point, Stocks, it's almost hard to come up with a way to invest badly in stocks. Stocks offer such a great value proposition. It's hard to see how you can mess up if you looked at it objectively. But when you look at it through the eyes of a human, a flawed human, which we all are, including me, including all rational investors, we can find a way to mess up. We figured it out. The way to mess up is to buy into passive investing or some similar highly emotional approach. The way you mess up is you invest heavily in stocks at times of high valuations, and then you suffer a wipeout. And then you end up selling when prices are low, which means you give up most of the gains you had in earlier years, and then you start all over. So you never see those. You know, the average long-term return on stocks is 6.5% real. You never get to see that because you don't participate, because you weren't able to stay in stocks because you were so wildly overinvested when prices were high that you couldn't hang in there through the down times. You know, viewed objectively, you would say, why would anyone do that? Especially since we have a track record. We can look at the historical data and see, you know, we've tried this 3 times. It's never worked. Why would they do it a 4th time? Well, nobody's talking about those 3 times. You see, we're all talking about passive investing. We're all saying that we have these slogans we come up with, stocks for the long run, stocks for the long run, stocks for the long run, or timing never works, timing never works, timing never works. And that's where we put our faith, not in the historical data, not in our common sense. We buy into the slogans, which are emotional. Slogans are emotional in nature, not rational. The historical data, looking at how stocks have always performed in the past, that I believe is a rational approach to deciding on an investing strategy. So the item 15 is that the failure of the defenders of passive investing to lower their own stock allocations tells me, it's one of the things telling me that passive investing is an intensely emotional approach to investing. Item 16, the retirement risk evaluator. The retirement risk evaluator is a calculator at my website and also at John Walter Russell's website. And what it's a calculator that tells you the safe withdrawal rate. It's for planning a retirement to find out what the safe withdrawal rate is. It's the only analytically valid safe withdrawal rate calculator available on the internet today. It's a new school calculator. It includes an adjustment for valuations. It's not one of these old school calculators that tell you that the safe withdrawal rate is 4% no matter what price stocks are selling at. It tells you at some prices, the safe withdrawal rate is 2%. At other prices, the safe withdrawal rate is 9%. And at other prices, it's something in between those two. Now, I put this as a separate item because what the retirement risk evaluator does really is it took years of research by John Walter Russell. We did this all in real time. We developed this new investing model, you know, before the eyes of the world. John and I didn't go into a room somewhere and come up with this stuff. We did this all on public discussion boards so that at every stage we could be questioned. And John was doing research in real time over at the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group on a daily basis. John is also retired, and John has been working this full time for over 6 years now and publishing all his research, you know, for anyone who cares to look at it. And what the calculator did was we had years of research that, you know, we knew how exciting it was because we worked with it every day. It led to all kinds of implications, stretching in hundreds of directions. But we wanted to come up with a way of helping people to get introduced to the research. And that's the calculator. And what the calculator does is, you know, you just plug in your assumptions. You know, how much money do you have? You know, how long a retirement are you talking about? What's the stock price today? What PE10 level are we at? How much of your portfolio how much are you willing to allow the amount of your portfolio to diminish over time? Or do you want it to hold steady? You know, enter these things, click a button, and it tells you what the odds are of success. So I use that calculator. It helps me think. Looking at the historical data would do the same thing, but not in the same way, not as effectively, because if you're studying the historical data, your mind can only take in bits at a time. And it takes time to work through step by step. And by the time you get to point 10, you've sort of forgotten about point 1. But with the calculator, it's obviously it goes much faster than that's the whole benefit of a calculator than the human mind can. So you can enter a scenario, push a button, and find out what the historical data says. It sums up the historical data in one little number, which is the safe withdrawal rate that applies for that particular set of assumptions that you entered. Well, using the retirement risk evaluator did a great job of persuading me of just how bad the passive investing model is. And let me just draw back on that statement just a little bit. When I say just how bad it is, I do mean that. I think the passive investing model has meant great pain for many, many, many people, millions of middle-class investors. That doesn't mean that the passive our belief in passive investing never produced anything good. It produced a lot of good. You know, if you follow the history of investing, you will find that when we started to believe in passive investing, the efficient market theory came out as an academic theory in the late 1960s. And, you know, we had great books produced. A Random Walk Down Wall Street. It's a classic. John Bogle's Common Sense on Mutual Funds. A classic. Stocks for the Long Run. A classic. These are all books that were influenced by the passive investing school of thought. Influenced dramatically, you know, in a great way. So we learned all kinds of things. The old school safe withdrawal rate studies are a product of the passive investing mindset. And we learned from the old school studies. There wouldn't be a new school if there hadn't been an old school. So I'm going to hit on passive investing. You're going to hear me hit on it all the time. But please implicitly understand when I say anything negative about passive investing, that what I'm saying is that today, now that we've discovered that passive investing doesn't work, it's time to let go and move to the next step in our understanding of how stocks work. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm saying it's bad today. I'm not saying it was bad that we, you know, for 10 years or 20 years or whatever it was, we believed in passive investing because we learned. We you know, humans didn't come into the world knowing everything. So we have to learn. But the learning process involves a key stage in the learning process is saying, I was wrong. When you learn you were wrong, say you're wrong, and then go on, move forward. That's the problem we're facing today. It's the failure of both the experts. I put the primary blame on the experts, but also middle-class investors. We have a role in it too. If we put more pressure on the experts to say that they're wrong, to put forward statements that make sense, they would do it. A lot of them want to do it. Because that's, you know, I've mentioned, I find these things all the time where experts sort of drop in somewhere, you know, a discussion of some of the realities. And I think the experts are reluctant to explore the realities in any depth, because they're afraid what the reaction's going to be, and we need to encourage them. So passive investing played a positive role at a time, but once we discovered it was flawed, once it was discredited, then we should have started moving to a new model. But the retirement risk evaluator is a great way of learning just how emotional, because you see the distinction between the results you get with the emotional approach and the results you get with the rational approach. And seeing that distinction will firm your resolve. You know, you'll look at that and you'll use that calculator and you'll come away from it saying, why are we even talking about this? Why are we even having discussions about whether we can have honest debate on investing on discussion boards or not? Of course we should have honest debate. Just like we have honest debate on every other topic under the sun. Why should investing be any different? Use the calculator, and I think you'll see where I'm coming from. Item 17 is another calculator, the stock return predictor. And all that is when John and I had completed, well, John did all the research, please understand. He does all the statistical research. When I say John and I, you know, I the way I say it is that my role in this partnership is to ask lots of annoying questions. John does research, and I come along and say, well, what about this, John? What about this? What about this? I have all these dumb questions. And, you know, every now and then I get lucky and I put forward a dumb question that actually leads them to something. But when I say we, you know, we work together, but John does the research. Okay, John is the statistics guy. You don't want to let me near a statistic, believe me. That would be a mistake of the first rank. Anyway, we had done the work for the retirement risk evaluator. We put out the calculators in the opposite order, but in terms of the research, John did the research for the risk evaluator first. And then, you know, the question was, well, okay, we've done helpful work for retirees. How about the non-retirees? There's millions of people trying to learn how to invest. In order to put together the risk evaluator, we had to do statistically valid predictions of future stock returns. You can't figure out whether your retirement plan is safe or not without doing predictions of what sort of return you're going to get. And you can't, you know, you cannot tell precisely. There is no way to know precisely what your return will be. But what you can do statistically is you can find a range of possibilities, and you can assign various probabilities to various points along the range. So you can say, you know, you have a 50% chance of a return better than this, you have a 30% chance of a return better than this, and so forth. Well, after we've done all that work, why not use that for the non-retiree? Why not tell all the other people out there what their returns are likely to be? That's the stock return predictor. And I don't mean to brag, but what a powerful tool. My name is on this calculator, so I'm biased. Discount for that, please. But it stuns me and amazes me that here I sit recording a podcast talking about the stock return predictor. It uses the historical data to tell you what your likely return on a purchase of the S&P index is in 10 years and in 20 years and in 30 years. It took Rob Bennett to come up with the idea to put out such a calculator? Holy moly. This is a tool that everyone who has more than $10 invested in stocks should be looking at before putting money on the table. That's my belief. To not know what your likely return is like buying a car without knowing the price. If your spouse went off, you know, you discussed, you need to buy a new car. You talked about, well, I like this kind of car. And then your spouse said, well, I'll go out and make the purchase. And your spouse went to the dealer and came back with a car. And it looked like a nice car. But then you said, what did you pay? And your spouse said, oh, I never thought about that. I just gave away all our bank information and said, you know, take the money out. There would be a little discussion. There would be a little family discussion at the dinner table that night, right? You don't hand your bank book to the guy at the car dealership and say, take out whatever you want to take out. You ask him the price. Well, that's how it works with stocks, if you have any common sense whatsoever. Now, I don't mean an insult. I don't mean to tell my listeners they lack common sense. But the truth is, I also want you to achieve financial freedom early in life. The truth is, if you haven't checked the prices of the stocks before you buy them, you are, in an objective sense, you are acting as if you did not have common sense. I have no doubt, if you're listening to my podcast, I know you're one of the smartest people out there. So I have no doubt that you exhibit common sense in every other area of life endeavor. For whatever reasons, when it comes to stocks, you put that on the shelf. And that's what I'm telling you not to do. And I have identified the passive investing model as the reason why you have abandoned common sense. You've listened to these people telling you, Can't time the market. Can't time the market. Can't time the market. And because you heard that so many times, you started thinking it doesn't matter what the price is. If I can't time the market, why bother looking at the price? Well, you can time the market. And the stock return predictor shows you that the historical data says you can time the market. You can't time the market. Short-term timing, no. I can't tell you what the market's going to be a year from now. Long-term timing, yes. If you know the price, you know the long-term value proposition, you know you need to make some adjustments in your stock allocation when prices get out of control. So, critical tool for any investor, the stock return predictor. Number 18, the investor scenario surfer. That's yet a third calculator. It's my favorite calculator. I don't pitch it as often as I do the return predictor because the scenario surfer is a little more sophisticated, and I'd like people to start with the return predictor and work their way up to the scenario surfer. But the scenario surfer, it's a teaching tool. It doesn't hit you as hard when you first look at it as the predictor. But over time, the scenario surfer is one that you could use. You could use it thousands of times and still learn new things. Now, what it does is it lets you enter in a scenario, an investing scenario. You choose a certain valuation level. You choose how much money you have in your stock portfolio. And you press a button. And it gives you the results you might obtain in a year. Now, there is not one set of results possible, but it generates one realistic scenario. One scenario that's in accord with how stocks have always performed in the past. And if you use the calculator a second time, you'll, of course, get a totally different scenario. And as many times as you use it, you'll get different scenarios, all in accord with the historical data, how stocks have always performed in the past. And then after you get that 1 year, you can make a decision. You can leave your stock allocation where it is, or you can change it. And then, you know, you push the button for the second year's results. And then again, you make your decision whether to stick with your allocation or not. And what you find is long-term timing always works. Long-term timing beats rebalancing over and over and over again. There are a small number of cases you'll get better results at the end of 30 years with rebalancing, but I am convinced that doesn't show that rebalancing is a better strategy. It's just that a high-risk strategy can occasionally work out, but it's rare. And so what's going on there is you're taking on more risk, and you're occasionally getting a little bit of a payoff, but on a risk-adjusted basis, long-term timing is always the way to go, according to the calculator, which is produced through use of the historical stock return data. So long-term timing always works according to the historical stock return data, is the takeaway. So that's a teaching tool. I urge you to use it. And I think every time I use it, I walk away more confirmed than ever that passive investing is for the birds. Because what you're doing, see what I want. Let me tell you what I want out of all this. You know, why do I produce these podcasts and the articles at my site? What I want is a national debate on investing. I want all these people working with us. You know, John Bogle, Bill Bernstein, Scott Burns, on and on. Those are the three I mention all the time because I've had interactions with them. But I don't mean just those three. Everybody who's advocating passive investing today, I want them to learn how to say the words, I was wrong, or if they can't say I was wrong, at least learn how to say, I'm not sure. That would open up a national debate because there are a lot of smart people out there who know that passive investing doesn't add up. I've talked to hundreds of them on the various boards, and they're smart as can be, and they've tried it. You know, Bogle says he doesn't know anybody. He doesn't know anybody who has timed the market successfully. Well, I do. I've talked with hundreds of them. And I want all these people interacting on the internet, sharing what they learn. I want Bogle to share what he knows. And if he's suspicious, great. We need to hear what he says. We need to respond. But we'll all learn together. What we will do is we'll build a new model of how to invest effectively. A model that really works, a model that really stands up to scrutiny. In other words, the people backing passive investing, they need to take it down about 17 notches. They need to stop saying, we're right, we're right, we're right. You can't question us, you can't question us, you can't question us. They need to let it down 17 notches. And then knowledge will start to flood in. And maybe I will find I'm wrong about some things. Probably I will. The odds are I will. That's the way it usually works, isn't it? Well, I want to learn that. I've got money at stake. I want to learn what I've got wrong. And I want Bogle to learn what he's got wrong, and so forth and so on. So, if Bogle would use the scenario surfer, I think it would be fair to say Bogle would learn. And we need Bogle to learn because he's a leader and people listen to him. And when he comes out and says, hey, I still sort of like passive investing, but I'm beginning to have some doubts. That's when we're off to the races. That's when the real fireworks, the good kind, begin. That's what we need to see happen. So the scenario surfer, go to the website, use it, and it will persuade you. And then you take the message to Bogle, please, you know. You can talk to Bogle. Go to the Bogleheads board. Sign up for one of their meetings. And Bogle appears at those meetings. And ask him. Say, John Bogle, have you used the scenario surfer? Because I've used it. And it blew my mind. And I'm learning. And every time I use it, I learn more. Have you used it, John Bogle? You know. That's how we get this thing on the right track. All right. Alarm bell number 19, the reality checker. That's a fourth calculator. It's not at the website yet. John and I are working on it. We've seen early versions, which are, it's very exciting stuff, but there have been problems with getting it technically all to appear properly the way we want it to appear. So that's been a frustration. But what the reality checker does is it runs many iterations of the scenario surfer. You stick in inputs. You say, this is what I want to examine. I want to examine this particular scenario, these assumptions. But instead of giving you one result, which always has an element of randomness in it, it runs that scenario 100 times and tells you how many good results you got, how many poor results, how many average results. And then you can compare different strategies. You know, you can compare rebalancing with valuation-informed indexing and say, how many times does rebalancing do best? And there are some cases where that happens. My sense is that it's about 10%, but I could be wrong. That's just a surmise. But it's clear that the majority of cases, valuation-informed indexing wins. But the reality checker will give you more precision on that. And then you can change, you know, instead of lowering your stock allocation when we get to a PE 10 of 20, you can try what happens when I don't lower it until we get to 22. Or what happens if I lower it when we get to 18? Does that help or does that hurt? As always with any of these calculators, none of them give you final answers. You cannot use historical data as your only guide to how to invest. That will not work. Please understand. But it's great guidance. It gets you on the right track. And then you've got to use your own common sense and your own thoughts about how investing may be different in the future than it's ever been in the past. You know, maybe the United States has seen its best days. If that's the case, and productivity is going to be going down in the future, you need to subtract something from all of these results, from all the calculators. Or maybe we're about to enter our golden age. We're going to enter an age better than we've ever seen before. If that's the case, you need to add something to all these numbers. All that these calculators do, all of them, is report how stocks will perform in the future in the event that they perform in the future somewhat as they always have in the past. That's always the assumption that we're using. We're developing tools. We're not giving you answers. These are tools to guide your thinking, to guide your analysis. But the reality checker is another one that the more you use it, once it's available at the website, the more you use it, the more it's going to help you understand how emotional an approach passive investing is and how appealing the idea of letting in a rational approach really is. It's You know, it's so strange because what we're talking about, all our debates have been about that first question. Will we allow honest posting? If you allow honest posting, you go off on this path, which is all good, win, 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 no downside. But if you try to stomp out the desire for honest, informed posting on investing questions, and we've had thousands of people at our boards that, you know, express a desire that honest, informed posting be permitted on safe withdrawal rates and on all other valuation questions. If you try to stomp it out, what you get is just ugliness. Deception, intimidation, word games, smear campaigns, ugliness, piled on ugliness, piled on ugliness. So a lot of people look at our discussions and they say, great safe withdrawal rate debate, what's so great about it? It's all ugly. It's all nasty. It's the dark side of human nature. Well, that is there. I don't deny it's there. I'd be crazy to deny it. But that is there because investing is so emotional. And this transition that we need to make, the transition from passive investing is science and no one may question it, that's where we are today, although belief in that is crumbling as we speak, to the higher level where we say, people who want to talk about passive investing, fine. Make your case. People who want to talk about rational investing, that's fine too. That's where we need to be. That's where we learn. And then the responsibility is taken off Rob Bennett's shoulders. I don't have to get it all right. I don't have to generate all the calculators. All these other people, you know, thousands and thousands are all helping out. And that's what we should have been doing from the first day. And the reason why we haven't been doing that is that passive investing is so emotional. It's an approach where it's all based on faith. You've got it. That you know, logic is applied at the secondary stage, but that key first question of, I will never change my stock allocation no matter what, that's the emotional part of it. It's the core is emotional. There's lots of logic applied on top of it. Very smart people applying human reason and putting a lot of work into it. But all that work is wasted because they get the numbers wrong because they've started with a premise that is false. Valuations do affect long-term returns. You can't stick with the same stock allocation. So the premise is wrong. And so while they put in great work, the emotional core does damage to everything that follows. Item number 20, alarm bell number 20. Discussion that passive investing was developed in the marketing departments. Well, there was a guy at the Vanguard Diehards board who said that he worked on Wall Street, and he said he sees these discussions and they sadden him because he said he sees a lot of good in passive investing, and I think that's fair. As I mentioned earlier, you know, good has come of it. We've learned. It was part of our learning journey. But he says when you read these people that are dogmatic about it, he says, you can tell by the way they say things. They know what's going to happen. They know their portfolios are at great risk, but they're trying to deny it, and they'll just go to crazy lengths to not say what is staring them in the face. One guy said it. He said, a lot of these people just blindly will go with whatever John Bogle says, and the guy said, if Bogle said that 2 and 2 plus 2 and 2 is 5, people would say, there's no 2 and 5 isn't that far from 4. Bogle's right. 2 and 2 is 5. There's no question that is so basic and so clear that they won't go into denial. They won't get defensive about it. Passive investing is like a god to these people. And I can't tell you how many times in our discussions people have brought up religious references. They say, you know, passive investing is a dogma, a religious dogma. And that's how they treat it. And that's what gives me the creeps. There may be a place in the world for religious dogma, but it ain't in discussions of investing. That ain't the place. So this guy said, passive investing was developed in the marketing departments of the Wall Street firms. And that just clicks for me because, you know, what it is it's all these slogans. It's just like a television commercial where you listen to it and you hear it, Crest toothpaste is recommended by 4 out of 5 dentists or Colgate or whatever it is. You know, you hear it 1,000 times if you watch television, and you get to a point where you don't necessarily believe the message. You know, we all know that there's spin involved in television commercials. But yet, there's something when you're in the drugstore and you're picking a toothpaste, you sort of feel you reach for the Colgate because you got a good feeling about Colgate. And you don't know where that good feeling comes from. It came from hearing 1,000 times that dentists like it. And that's what passive investing is all about. Nobody can come up with any reason why we shouldn't change our stock allocations when prices get out of hand. But we've got a bad feeling about it because we've heard timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work. It's a television commercial. And, the people who develop this, they know that we are driven to invest in stocks when they are priced too high. There's a long, long history of this. It's nothing new. And, you know, what they're doing is, from a marketing standpoint, is they're saying, give in to that. You know, you want chocolate cake? Eat chocolate cake. Eat chocolate cake for breakfast, lunch, dinner, after supper time. Eat it all the time. Chocolate cake is got all the good stuff in it. No calories. You can't get fat eating only chocolate cake. You'll be the healthiest person around. And we've got them pitching this over and over and over and over again. And we've got the thing with the chocolate cake is the people selling chocolate cake try to push it, but we've got people on the other side. We've got nutritionists telling us, no, that's not a good idea. But with stock investing, it's all the same story. You don't have anybody coming in and telling you, wait a minute, that's dangerous. You can't eat only chocolate cake. You can't always go with a high stock allocation. That's dangerous can be. But there's nobody out there who profits from telling you that message. So it's not that there's anything wrong with marketing. I think marketing has its place. But we need to have the experts counter the marketing. What the role of the experts, in my view, is to tell us why chocolate cake isn't always good. And, you know, some chocolate cake is fine, but you gotta do it in moderation. Item number 21. This came from a discussion I recently had with Michael Kitsis. And I'm writing the correspondence between Michael and me. He's the head of marketing research at Pinnacle Group, and a very, very smart guy and a nice guy. And we've had a lot of correspondence on safe withdrawal rates, and there's some great stuff in Michael's emails, and I like to think there's some good stuff in my emails back to him, and I'm publishing them at the blog. So check that out. And but Michael, in one of his comments, you know, I just felt he hit it on the head. And Michael doesn't really believe in passive investing. Michael will tell you that, yes, valuations affect long-term returns. And he urges his clients not to stick at the same stock allocation. So he's giving good advice. But, you know, we were talking about why don't the experts do more to get the word out? So that middle-class investors know this. They know that passive investing has been discredited. Not in the last 6 months. It's been discredited going back 10, 20 years. And the evidence just grows stronger and stronger all the time. Why don't the experts tell us? And Michael said, if you tell the straight story, and I'm not quoting him here. Check the blog and you'll get the quote. If you tell the straight story, you'll go out of business. Clients don't want to hear when stocks are at the prices they were at in January of 2000. People don't want to hear you need to lower your stock allocation. They want to hear to increase their stock allocation. They want to hear just the opposite. See, stock investing is emotional, and we are drawn to do just the worst thing at just the wrong time. And that's a big factor in what's going on here. Now, I'll talk in a later podcast. I think there's a way around that. The way around it is, if all of the firms were giving the rational investing approach, were basing their advice on the rational investing approach, it wouldn't be a competitive problem. You see, today, what passive investing does is it takes the emotional part and just pushes it in your face. It focuses on the emotional and makes it front and center. And so everybody hears it. And then if one guy out there is giving the straight story, well, the people are like, wait a minute. I heard on the television, I didn't hear what you're saying. You're saying lower my allocation. John Bogle's not saying that. Who are you? But what if John Bogle was saying it? What if everybody was saying, you need to lower your stock allocation when prices get out of control? Then the guy telling the straight story wouldn't be at a competitive disadvantage. So then what Michael is saying would not be so. And I think that's where most investing advisors want us to be. And I know that's where I want us to be. So that's where I want to push things. And to get from where we are to where we want to be, the key is acknowledging that we got some things wrong. And if we can't say I was wrong, let's at least learn how to say I'm not sure. Because if we can say I'm not sure, the debate begins. Then we get realistic discussion of how investing really has always worked in the real world. That's when the real fireworks, the good kind, begin. Good luck with your investing strategy. Take care.